Hello, I'm Liz Bobo, and this is Reflections on Life. As always, we will restart our program with a run-through of six different elements of life that I keep track of in my mind on a minute-by-minute basis to the best extent I can. The first is reflections on home in Colombia, followed by reflections on Zach, my grandson, then reflections on Baltimore, my hometown, reflections on public policy, reflections on our planet beyond the United States, and reflections on our universe. Reflections on home in Colombia. This is a happy time in Colombia every year because it's the time when we celebrate the Festival of the Arts here in our new town. This year we are promised to have very wonderful offerings in the areas of the arts, and I hope that you will all come out and take advantage of it. They will be in several different locations, many at the community college, some at the high schools, some at the lakefront. So we are very fortunate to have this festival coming up that we will be able to enjoy. Reflections on Zach, my grandson. Zachary died at the age of 21, having battled brain cancer for 4 different months in his life, 2 when he was 10 and 2 when he was 19. He loved spring, and he particularly loved birds in spring and following them and their colors and their growth. And I'm thinking of him so much this year because in our home here in Colombia, less than a mile from where we're recording this program, we have 2 birds' nests right attached to our home. One is on the 3rd floor right outside our bedroom window where 2 baby robins have hatched in the last week. And the other is down on the main floor right outside the dining room where there are 4 eggs in a nest that we can see when we look out of the window. We can look down on them. I don't know enough to know what kind of birds they are, but we're eagerly awaiting their hatching and becoming members of our neighborhood. Reflections on Baltimore, my hometown. Baltimore is such a magnificent city with such a deep, rich history, and at the same time, it has been undergoing some of the most difficult governmental experiences that I have ever seen anywhere. And the latest one is the University of Maryland Hospital System, which we are now learning has had considerable amount of financial lack of ethics, and they're working on it very hard now with a new mayor, and hopefully we will get that straightened out soon so that we can get back to working on the other problems that Baltimore has as a result of the economics and the way economic aid is distributed in this country so we can get back to building it back up to the beautiful city that it was. Reflections on public policy. It's interesting to see our president being so hesitant to put up a statue to Harriet Tubman in our country, along with the many other wonderful historic figures. And it's particularly interesting to watch it from our perspective as Howard Countyans, because we have a very special place for Harriet Tubman here in our own community, where it is a strong belief that she may have had part of her Underground Railroad less than a mile from where we're sitting and recording this program. So may we see our president develop the grace and the integrity to put this woman's statue where it belongs, in with the other magnificent people who have led this country. Reflections on our planet. The European Union votes were really quite a shock, I think, to people across the world. That shows that the people in the European countries are not happy with the status quo. We have a much stronger group coming forward who are going to place more emphasis and insist on getting more public policy in these European countries that is not based on whether it's to the right or whether it's to the left, but that's based on what is best for the people. A real eye-opener for all of us. And then reflections on the universe. One of my favorite authors or speakers is Eckhart Tolle, and he published a book recently entitled The Divine Purpose of the Universe. And when I went up to spend a time at a retreat with Eckhart Tolle in the Canadian Rockies, I learned so much from him. So I strongly recommend this book, The Divine Purpose of the Universe, guaranteed to be a good read and also guaranteed to be inspirational. Now, to today's guest, whom I have known not even by name, but for quite a few years now for the work he's done with the festival, the Columbia Festival of the Arts, and I'm so happy to be here with him today, Robert Neil Marshall.
Thank you, Liz. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm very glad to have you here. So tell us what part of the festival you're responsible for what to expect this year.
Oh, sure. Well, the Columbia Festival of the Arts has, as you already said, some wonderful programming this year. A one-man circus. We have Renee Maria, a beautiful jazz artist. We have Second City and a ton of film. And apart from the independent films that are part of the Columbia Festival of the Arts, I am now the executive producer of the Columbia Film Festival, which in its own right is 3 days of film from the 27th to the 29th of June. And this is going to be a new section to the Columbia Festival of the Arts. I'm very excited about the guests and the films that we have. Over 40 films coming
in. Over 40 films in a 3 day period?
3 day period. And you can do all day passes, buy individual tickets, or just get an all festival pass at a great discount. So it's a great deal and a lot to see.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Thank you. When we get
through our discussion about end-of-life issues, I'd like you to come back and tell us
sure.
a little bit
Happy
more,
to.
Headline one or two or three of them.
Okay.
So when I have thought of end-of-life experiences, I have thought about them in two different ways, and I doubt that I'm unique in that. I think of it as a physical, mental experience, but also as a spiritual experience. And when I say spiritual, I don't mean religious.
Right.
I mean spiritual,
mm-hmm.
which
There's
we all
difference.
Have. We all have a spiritual side to us, whether we tend to it or not, it's
right.
there.
It's there.
And then there's the physical element of it. So I'd like you to give us a brief accounting of what your end-of-life experience consisted of. And was it more, I know, good for just a few-minute answer, right? And then was it more spiritual?
Tell us about it very briefly. I'm a near-death survivor, a near-death experiencer, as they say. On August 3rd, 2013, I had a massive heart attack. I had the Widowmaker. It's called VFib, ventricular fibrillation. I had 100% blockage in my LAD, left anterior descending artery is what it is technically. And my heart was starved for blood, and it started quivering. It loses rhythm, and then you're basically gone. And at that particular point, I was clinically dead for a minute and a half, and they resuscitated me in an ambulance. So that experience, as you can imagine, is extremely transformative when you come back from being dead and you're trying to figure out what happened and why am I still here and what do I have to do? And it's very surreal in itself, the fact that it's even happened, and it takes a lot of adjusting. So for me, I was not particularly religious as far as an organized religion, but spiritual in the sense that there was consciousness, there was awareness, there was a very intense experience. And then the experience of coming back is a struggle. A lot of people deal with what we call after effects. And I did a documentary called Back from the Light with another woman named Yvonne Sneeden about how difficult it is to reassimilate into the world when you've been through something like that. It's a little bit like PTSD, except without the violence necessarily. It's a very pleasurable experience, as strange as that may sound. But spiritually, it is a connection to the life force around us, to trees, to the breeze, to people, everything. It just, everything, you see things differently and you feel things differently. And it's very hard to explain to people who have not been through that, the uniqueness and the sheer joy, as strange as that sounds.
It sounds strange, not too strange to me. I've never had anything even close to a near-death experience.
Well, I'm glad.
I have paid a lot of attention in the last 20 years of my life, and I'm now 75, so that was, you know, 50, mm-hmm. about the age of 50. I've been on several month-long silent retreats.
Wonderful. Yeah.
And with a Buddhist monk. But it's not a religious, we are not taught about the religious elements of Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
You can take it the kind of retreat where that is part of it, but that is not what I've chosen to do.
Right.
And I've never had, not only have I never had a near-death experience, I've never had a serious physical crisis in my life. I gave birth to two kids.
It went smoothly, and you came through. We hope that's the norm for most.
I've had some trouble with an infection at one point that was a little bit scary, but just I've never had anything even close to that.
Right.
So how has it impacted every aspect of your life? Is the awareness with you all the time?
It's crazy.
Are these fair questions?
No, they're very fair questions. As I started to say, it's very surreal to think about it because it's the ultimate question that every single living person has, isn't it? What is it like to die? When am I going to die? How am I going to die? And the very basic religions of the world, they're founded on what happens when we leave this planet. Politics are guided by decisions that we make all about what happens when we're dead. So when you actually confront it and you've been there, I kind of got to look through the door, but they gave me a chance to come back. The universe, me, whatever it was. It changes your perception of everything. The things that people worry about in life are so minor. They don't mean anything anymore. Accomplishment, fame, money, being driven, worry. I mean, there's nothing to worry about. We are part of everything, is what I perceived. And that connection became so all-consuming that, yes, I think about it every single day of my life, and I also learn to embrace every single day of my life. And it's interesting because people who are so wound up in this world for various reasons, just because I had a near-death experience and I feel connected to life and nature and I want to hug trees, to be corny about the expression, doesn't mean that everybody else can't feel that joy, that connection. The problem is, in my mind, and we use I statements because I can't tell you this is definitively what happens. This is my experience and my interpretation, although there are others that clearly share that, is that if we are all connected to some kind of universal light, energy, love, whatever you want to call it, then we all can tap into that feeling and that emotion. But there's too much noise in life, isn't there? Worries about money and life and accomplishments and politics. So I always believe now more than ever that if we can clear our heads and appreciate some of the most simple things in life, it actually enhances everything else in our life and our feeling of connection to it. And you don't need to die to have that happen.
I don't mean to imply that attending silent retreat for a certain period of time is tantamount to having a near-death experience, but that what you describe is very similar to what those retreats do for me to keep me. I slip off every day and realize that I am part of the universal system.
Absolutely.
Whatever that is, and whoever created it, and whoever keeps it going, and it's whoever's holding the key. It's very helpful to me.
Yes. But
so the experience that you had before the near-death experience,
right,
the experience of the serious physical condition, when did the near-death experience commence? Had you become unconscious, for example?
I was completely awake and alert, and basically I'd had undiagnosed gallbladder issues, which are extremely painful, and the symptoms mimic a heart attack. I've since learned. I didn't know at the time. And I'd had these things that would just lift. I'd be in excruciating pain. I would feel better suddenly and easily. So I'm walking around for 45, 50 minutes saying, oh, this is going to lift. This is going to go away. I was supposed to go on a trip the next day. And I thought, if I call up and go into the emergency room, it's going to ruin the trip the next day. Not that dying wouldn't have ruined the trip the next day as well. But, I hate to say it, I have a weird sense of humor about it now because there's no fear anymore. No fear whatsoever of what it's like to die, having been through it. I know what to expect.
Mm. Well, that's one comparison I cannot make to my retreats.
Well, I understand.
Yeah,
well,
I want to let you know that I know they're not equal.
But that's the thing I'm trying to say, is that we are all part of the same. We are all connected, and however we connect to that life force, that energy. But it is something that when it happened, I called 911 finally because I just wanted the pain to stop. I didn't realize it was as serious as it was. I literally walked to the ambulance myself, and by miracle, a voice in my head said, hit the button and call 911. And the Rivers Park, the paramedics, which I have to give a big salute, a big kudos. Every time I see them, and whether it's at Whole Foods or somewhere, I'm a Stalker fan now. I thank them so much for saving my life. And I went back a week later after I got out of the hospital to thank them, and I wanted to learn more about what happened. And they were surprised. Nobody goes back to thank somebody. If they save your life, how could you not thank them? So power to them, and it's a really wonderful, wonderful crew here in Howard County. I'm so appreciative. But that said, I was just questioning what was going on. I was in pain. I am a member of the LGBT community, so one of the last things nearly that I said was, that man inside is my husband. I want to know that he has the right to be near me should something happen, not expecting anything serious, just knowing I was going into a hospital and ambulance. And then when I described the pain that was not only in my chest and in my arms, the arm pain set off alarms, I found out from them. So they wanted to put more of the leads on me for the monitor, the heart monitors. And they said, can we take off your robe to get, I was in my bathrobe, it was 3:30 in the morning, to get access to your chest. I said, sure, whatever you need to do. And the next thing I know, I am like floating in this space and shooting through. You know, I mean, it was just it was instant. And it was like changing the channel on a television set, where suddenly you're watching one scene, one movie, click, you're now watching something else. It was no recognition of I was sick, I was feeling pain, nothing. I was just suddenly in a new place.
I know that a few months ago, which now may mean it was a year ago, time goes faster and faster.
I say the other day, and that could have been 3 years ago.
I know that I bumped into you at Whole Foods.
Right.
And we didn't know each other well, but you recognized me, and then you reminded me of who you were.
Right.
And it so happened that there were a group of members of the fire service sitting at a table having lunch very nearby.
Yes.
And you told me about that then. And then I went over and talked with you guys for just a very couple minutes. My husband wanted, we were on our way out. And so here's my question. Have you talked with them about what their experience was? Did they have any idea that you were going through anything different than what any injured person does? Were they curious?
Well, they were very professional. I mean, to be honest with you, they came to the door. They told me on 911 while I was holding on the phone, you know, do you have a pet? Put the pet away. And my other half was putting the dog away. So I'm the one who answered the phone, the door, rather. And they said, is it you? I'm like, yes, I'm the one. I thought it was just indigestion at the time. So they said, well, can you walk to the ambulance? I'm like, I've been walking around for 45, 50 minutes. I'm in pain, but sure. Not knowing how serious it really was. So they told me afterwards that when I got into the ambulance and they started asking me questions, and when I talked about the extent of the pain and where it was, all the alarm bells went off. And that's why they wanted to put the extra leads on me. And unfortunately, I went into VFib right then. And it was a miracle of timing. I was in the ambulance. I would have been dead because you don't come out of VFib. You have to be shocked to break the rhythm.
So you were already unconscious when you was there. A brief time of lack of consciousness before
I was in the ambulance.
That you were going into a...
No. I mean, literally, I'm in the chair. They asked me if they could take my robe off. I said, whatever you need to do. And then suddenly, I'm just in a new place, in a new situation, with no recollection of anything prior that had happened, and feeling incredible, and just enjoying this what was almost like a psychedelic, crazy trip. But I didn't know I was dead. I had no idea. And then as I came back from this...
I'm saying, but I can't
No, and as I came back from it...
There's a part of me that is curious and wants to experience this, but not that badly.
One day, Liz, you will.
That's true.
We all will.
That's true.
But no, it was something so easy. It was the easiest, most beautiful, simplest thing that we will ever do. The part that's bad for anyone is how we get to that point. You know, if there's suffering, if you're dealing with cancer, I know that your family with Zach, I mean, it's a very sensitive, delicate issue. I was very lucky in the sense that with a heart attack, in what happened, 1 second you're awake and just feeling the pain, and the next second, as soon as you stop breathing and your heart stops, that's it, you're done. They just were able to start it again.
I want to tell you how pleased I am that you give such voice to credit the fire service members for what they do.
They're amazing.
They don't frequently get that kind of acknowledgement.
Right.
And it's...
they're heroes every day, and they take it in stride.
Right. And it's particularly exciting in Howard County right now. At least I find it very exciting that our current county executive, Calvin Ball, mm-hmm. has selected women to head up not only the fire service, but the police service.
Yes.
Which is really...
very exciting.
And I don't think he did it. I'm sure he didn't do it just to select a woman. I think he selected the most qualified applicants. But right. there in the past have been a lot of people, particularly guys, but also women who mm-hmm. are elected, were hesitant to put women in certain positions.
To take a risk
and,
like that.
Yeah. And when I was county executive back, oh my God, it's been so many years ago now, 30-some years, the fire service guys were so great to work with and so devoted
Such
to,
professionals.
To their work.
Yeah.
Yeah, professionals and also, you know, with their heart. They really...
Oh, compassion.
Know, they love...
When I expressed my concern about my other half, my partner there... And these were big macho guys, and I'm like, and they were like, oh, don't worry about it. I mean, they really made me feel at ease right away. And then we dealt with the medical side, and then I was gone.
mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
No, it they made me feel very comfortable in every sense of the word, and then saved my life.
As a fairly heavy reader and former literature major, I've Googled this and checked on various different articles.
Make sure I'm telling the truth, yeah.
No, not to make sure you're telling the truth. To heighten my awareness
yes,
and
yes.
to have me participate in this conversation with you with as much openness in my mind as possible.
Of course.
The article I found that I... you know, spoke most clearly to me was from The Atlantic, which happens mm-hmm. to be my favorite publication.
Excellent publication.
And it was by a physician who had undergone a near-death experience himself
mm-hmm.
and was so amazed by the spiritual aspect of it that he
it's transformative, as people say. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about this earlier. There's a spiritual transformative experience too, that people don't necessarily have to have a near-death experience for that. People can feel transformed through meditation, through just finding a serenity, or sometimes people through extreme stress mm-hmm. and other things that are not necessarily related to physical, clinical death, even mm-hmm. if you are resuscitated. People just come out of something feeling a different connection. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it is the after effects that seem to define the experience.
That's a very, what a great choice of words.
Yeah,
very great choice of words. It has been a surprise to me to hear about how well you've been able to integrate this experience, this near-death experience, into your life and carry it all on in a very positive way. You've integrated it as a positive aspect that probably enhances all other aspects of your life, would be my guess, for what you
for
have
me,
told me.
But not necessarily for everyone.
Well, that's my question.
Yeah.
Have you come in contact with people who have had a near-death experience who have not adjusted the way you have? Perhaps they have not been exposed to the same kind of people who you have,
right.
or the same kind of teachers, or the same kind of philosophers. So if you've had that experience with some people who have struggled, would you tell us a little bit about it?
Absolutely. And I don't want to make it sound like it's all just been such a wonderful, keen, beautiful experience for me either. Those are the positive aspects of it. Some of the after effects of surviving a near-death experience is trying to assimilate in a world that sometimes thinks we're a little crazy by the things that we say. There is definitely a high degree of depression as an after effect, which I have dealt with. I wouldn't necessarily define it as clinical depression, but there is a sadness having been in the light and being so free and so completely wrapped in everything is done. I'm finished. This is good. I'm on permanent vacation, to suddenly being back in the real world. And a lot of people struggle with all that love that you feel and then to come back into such a harsh world. So I'm not really exclusively all that joyful at times. That's the struggle. And there are many people who struggle with it. My film, again, Back from the Light, deals with the after effects and the struggle that people can find on Vimeo or backfromthelight.com. There's a DVD as well, but you can download it or watch it online. But the fact is, people need to find answers and not feel that they're alone, and many people do. So there's a group, for example, that meets in Maryland and around the country. They're individual groups from IANS, International Association of Near-Death Studies, where survivors come and talk, or people who've lost relatives, or they're just curious and frightened about death. And people will come and join us. So some of us are direct near-death survivors, have been clinically dead in an accident or surgery or heart attack. It sounds crazy, but yes, that's what it's like. But there are people who come because they want answers, or someone's dealing with a relative who's dying. They want to know, well, what's going to happen? What's it like? And all we can do is share our experiences. And I think it does bring a sense of calm. But yes, there's a very difficult side to it as well.
Mm-hmm. I want to thank you for your making it such a personal mission to get your experience out there. And you are I don't want to describe you as a dramatic speaker, although I know you could be and probably are on many instances a dramatic speaker. But I mean, you speak from the heart. You speak so clearly. And for me personally, I am comforted by hearing your story, because who knows what we all have ahead of us and how scary it might be. We do know we're going to die. And I and one of the reasons I meditate as much as I do is not, mainly it's to live a life of peace, but also anticipating a death of peace, if that's at all possible.
Right.
So I'm personally grateful
to you. Well, thank you. And I also want to say, too, that I feel that part of why I'm back is a mission, a feeling of I've got to do something. Why am I still here? Why am I given this bonus time? And part of it is, if it provides insight, comfort, joy, serenity from my experience to help others, then I feel I'm doing something that I am supposed to be doing. And one final message in that is that live every single day as if it were your last, even if chances are we all have many, many more years, because that Friday was like any other day. I didn't know that last conversation would have been it, wrapped up with a bow. So speak very well and tell people you love them every day, and think about how rich your life would really be if you still get to live all those years and how you embraced it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have made a decision a minute ago, 2 minutes ago, that I don't want to go back to the film series. Be sure to check it out, because I want us to end on this note and ask you to even say a few more words, if you're willing, how the near-death experience has not only not diminished your life, it has expanded, and the beautiful experience you're having as a human being alive on planet Earth.
Life is challenging no matter what. I mean, that is a simple truth. I think this is one of the most challenging universities, this journey through life that we're on. And sometimes we don't understand our true purpose, and we think it's things that we're taught. We think it's things we're supposed to achieve and accomplish, when sometimes it's just loving other people, showing them love, care, consideration, kindness. The world looks different to me than it ever has. It is looking at trees and life and everything around me in a very different way. There is a vibration, a connection, a beauty that just, the colors are brighter is the only way I could say that. Passion, the love in my heart, my desire to understand things, that's something that is very powerful. That I've had a spiritual sort of outlook in my life, not religious, as you say, but spiritual most of my life. But this experience, as I've said to others, it's like someone turned the volume very, very loud. And I hope I'm bringing joy and calmness and insight and comfort to people, because I think that's part of it.
I believe, in the time I've been listening to you, that anyone can learn from your experience, no matter how rigid they may be, no matter how they may poo-poo the idea of any kind of out-of-body experience.
It's an outlook. It's an outlook and a perception, isn't it?
You know, I think so.
An attitude.
Yes, I think so.
We can all make a difference if we just allow ourselves to and get the noise of the difficult world out of our heads. Mm-hmm. I say every day I try to find some serenity whatever that is. For me, it's walking Butte, Columbia, Howard County. It's walking around Lake Elkhorn and feeling the breeze and watching the trees wave and seeing the deer that are walking through and the wildlife. I mean, that's just it fills me with such joy and such love.
And one of the things that the words that I repeat to myself most often at any time in any place from the Buddhist monk who led the non-religious meditation retreat that I went on, and his words are, come from love, not fear.
Absolutely.
Always come from love, not fear.
That's beautiful.
No matter how afraid you are, it's possible to reach in and come from love instead.
Absolutely.
And I want to thank you, Robert Neil Marshall, for being a very good example of that.
Thank you, Liz Bobo. I love you for having become a friend and also for this opportunity to share this. I appreciate it.
The appreciation's mine. This has been Reflections on Life. I'm Liz Bobo. Until our next segment, be well and love life.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.